one and all, and welcome to Film Fragments, a podcast where we take fragments of an actor, director, and genre and tell you our favorites from their catalog. My name is Brian Suffield. I'm your host, and I'm very excited to welcome you guys to this week's episode of Film Fragments, where today we're going to be talking about our favorite film starring Robert De Niro. Last week we did an episode in honor of Killers of the Flower Moon, where we talked about Leonardo DiCaprio, and we're doing that same thing by continuing it this week by talking about the other star of Killers of the Flower Moon, Robert De Niro. We'll be delving into our favorite film starring the two-time Oscar-winning actor, the guy who's been acting in many films for the past five decades. He has collaborated with Martin Scorsese more than any other actor known to man. He's worked with so many different filmmakers throughout the years. He's done a multitude of different genres across different decades and different directors and different tones and what have you. The guy has done practically everything. He's in his 80s. It's absolutely insane that he's still acting to this day, but I have so much respect for Robert De Niro. Even though he has fumbled a little bit in terms of his film quality, you could always tell that in some capacity, or most of the time, he likes to give it his all, and he definitely shows it when given the right material. But today we're going to be talking about our favorites from his catalog, and I'm very excited to welcome today's guest. We have a returning guest today. She was last on super early in the podcast, back in episode 5, I believe, where we talked about, fittingly enough, Martin Scorsese. And today she's back talking with me about Robert De Niro. It's Amanda Garagi. Amanda, welcome back.
Hi! I'm so excited to be back. It's literally, I feel like it's been a whole year. But I'm just so happy to be here and to talk about one of my favorite actors of all time. Like, I absolutely love Bobby, so it's going to be a good time.
I'm very happy that you're here. I'm so happy that you're back. Yeah, it's been a year, a little over a year since you last came on. And it feels like it was so much longer ago. And it's funny because we just saw each other in person a couple of weeks ago. And that feels like it was also a year ago.
I know. It feels like an eternity, honestly.
It really does. It really does. But today, Robert De Niro talking about Bobby De Niro. And, you know, before we get into talking about why we love him and why we get excited for his films and everything, I gotta ask you the classic curveball question, the classic which character would you take to dinner? So, Robert De Niro character. You get the opportunity to take a character to dinner. Which character would it be and why?
Oh my god, that's so hard. Definitely not Travis Bickle.
If you picked Travis, we would have had a serious problem.
Not Travis Bickle. You know what? I'd pick Vito Corleone, man. Like, I know. I'd pick a young Vito. I think that was one of the first times I've ever seen him on screen, and he just stayed with me, and I think that'd be a very interesting conversation, and I could speak to him in Italian because I'm fluent. That would work really well. Maybe it could work for him too. And just, we'll see how that goes.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, yeah. I like that pick. I really like that pick a lot, actually. For me, I am gonna choose, because straight up, I want to know all of his secrets and everything and all his affiliations with the cool gadgets and what have you. I'm going to go with Jack Burns from Meet the Parents. I'm going to go with that character because that character does all these crazy, wacky things and everything. And, you know, why not? Why not? And I love that character so much. Will that character be on the list? We'll have to see.
So
but no, I wanted to pick a funny De Niro character.
Yeah, I know you went funny and I went serious. So I guess that shows how much you went young.
Yeah. I went old.
Yeah, which is, again, it's a very interesting choice, but it's okay. It's fine. I don't want to say I love old De Niro, but like I love him at any age. He's been making movies for an eternity. It's really hard to not love him. Like, my household has been a De Niro household. Obviously a Scorsese household, so it's kind of hard to have one without the other here. But it was really fun growing up with him as an actor and to welcome him, you know, into our home every single time. Like, my dad loved him and he passed that down to me. So it's been really special just to grow old with Robert De Niro.
And, you know, going off that, why do you think a lot of people love Robert De Niro, even though his filmography has definitely been all over the place these last couple of years? Why do you think a lot of people still celebrate him as possibly one of the greatest actors of all time? And what makes you such a fan of Robert De Niro?
He can do anything. And I think that his early work speaks for itself. I think he's incredibly talented. You know, he's won Oscars. I just think that he's a very exciting actor to watch on screen. He's a chameleon, and Scorsese pulls out fantastic performances from him. Again, his early work more so, because he was taking different roles at the time. But what I loved is that when he got older, he made the transition into comedy. So people don't, unless, like, if you watched his dramatic performances, no one knows how good De Niro is as a comedic actor. And they don't expect him to be that good as a comedic actor. And I, like, I was a theater kid, and constantly it was like comedy's way harder than drama. In like that's what we were taught. And that's because you have to make someone laugh. And yet, like, that's even harder than making someone cry. So I think that for him to be so versatile and to go back and forth and to offer like family comedies and have people, like a new generation, be brought in to love him and then go back and watch his early stuff. Like, he's been around for a long time because he constantly changes with the times, and I love that.
Yeah, I agree. I think one of the best things about De Niro is that, like I said at the top, he doesn't stick to one specific genre. Yeah, a lot of people primarily know him for the crime gangster genre. He's obviously a pivotal part of that specific genre, but he is a guy that shows a multitude of layers throughout his entire career, and he's still doing that to this day. I mean, the fact that he's even still acting is really incredible. I mean, the guy's been acting since he was in his 20s, and now he's 80 years old, and he's still pumping out pretty great work. Yeah, the great work is definitely not as consistent as it may have been back in the day where he was doing all these movies, like these crime movies and these dramas and even comedies. But I love that, similar to what you said, he started off as kind of the prototype for the gangster crime genre. But then as he got older, he started transitioning and doing like romances and thrillers and action movies, and then he did comedy, and we saw this different side of him that we weren't used to seeing. But and now he's a guy that really, I really genuinely believe that he's done every genre. I can't think of a genre that he hasn't done. I was looking at his filmography right before we got on this call, and I was like, he's literally done everything. I mean, he's even done voice work too. Like, he's done his fair share of animated films as well, but.
Shark Tale. Sorry.
Will that be on the list? Tune in to find out. But no, I love De Niro. I do. And you know, even though I said that his filmography has been all over the place these last few years, I could still recognize that he is a genuinely great actor when given the right material, when he's given a great script and he's working with a great director and he's cast alongside a terrific ensemble. The best of him is brought out. And I'm so curious to hear what your list is. And we were making this joke before we started recording. How many Scorsese films are going to be in the top five? We will have to see how that goes because, I mean, you think about it, like he's done, I think, about 10 movies with Scorsese now. And, you know, and he's still working with him to this day, which is amazing.
I
He's
love
been
it.
working with him for 50 years. Literally 50 years ago was when Mean Streets came out. Now, 50 years later, they're doing Killers of the Flower Moon together. And it's like, the fact that they're still collaborating together is so exciting to me. But we'll obviously talk about our hype for Kills of the Flower Moon later in this episode. But right now, we're going to focus on the films that are already out. And we're going to get into our top five favorite films starring Robert De Niro. So, Amanda, the floor is yours. What is your number five favorite De Niro film of all time?
This was very hard. And like I just said, I really like his comedies. I think that he has incredible comedic timing as the straight man. And this was a very different role that he had to, that he took on. Still in line with the mobster that he has been accustomed to. I chose Analyze This. And I think that his chemistry with Billy Crystal was really strong. The fact that he was a mobster trying, you know, going to a therapist, and they played into the comedic elements of that, I thought was really interesting. Chaz Palminteri is also in that, which I love. It was just a different way to see the mob lifestyle, and they added humor to it. But it was very different for De Niro. You always see him as like this very tough character, the tough mobster, the tough exterior. Obviously, like Al Capone and The Untouchables, like that's one that comes to mind for me where he really had to sell that. And then here it's like he's crying, he's emotional, but he's still getting the job done. So it was just very layered for him. And I really like to analyze this. I think it's one of, I think it's my favorite comedy of his and probably his best, personally for me. So that is number five on my list.
So this is not on my list. I will preface this by saying that I unfortunately don't have any comedies on my top five De Niro list. It was really tough to not put a comedy on the list, but you know, when you're doing as many great movies as De Niro is, you gotta make some tough calls and omit some films from your top five. But I really do like Analyze This. I love the banter with him and Billy Crystal. They work off each other very beautifully, and I think Harold Ramis directs the hell out of this. I think this is actually one of his strongest directorial outings, for sure. I have not seen the sequel, but I've heard nothing but bad things about the sequel, so I will probably steer away from that and everything, but... yeah, I do love how De Niro is playing a mobster in it, but he has feelings, and I think that's really great. I think that's really funny. Like, it's a poke. It's poking at the fact that he's played so many mobsters throughout his career, and all of them are very brooding. Like you said, they have this very brooding exterior, and they're very tough and, you know, in your face and very violent and everything, but this guy is, like, a complete 180 from everything that he's ever done. And I love that. I think it's great. I think it's great. It's been a long time since I've seen it, so I'm definitely due for a rewatch of Analyze This. I definitely should get around to doing that very, very soon. So my number five, we're going to go from a very fun movie to a not-so-fun movie. My number five is Raging Bull. And I'm a big fan, big fan of this movie. The Criterion is literally in my hands right now as we speak. The beautiful 4K Criterion, just one of the best, one of the best Criterion releases in recent memory, hands down. But no, the story of Jake LaMotta, heavyweight boxer and everything, like literally going through the guy's life. It's not necessarily a cradle to death movie, but it goes through a good chunk of his life and everything and how he got into boxing and then his very terrible relationship where he was such an abusive guy. And then you have the relationship with his brother, who's played incredibly by Joe Pesci, the first of many collaborations between the two of them. Obviously, this was a Scorsese film. This was, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, the fourth Scorsese film that De Niro made with him. But I love the film so much. I think the black and white imagery is perfect. That opening title sequence where it's the title card and he's just in the boxing ring, then that score is playing. I'm trying to remember who did the score for this, because massive shout out to them. It does not say on this Criterion who did the music, so I can't tell you who did the music for the movie, but I think that Scorsese and Paul Schrader as well, great pairing. Whenever they work together, it's honestly magic in my eyes. But Raging Bull, some of De Niro's best acting to date is in this film. He obviously walked away with the Oscar for this film, rightfully so. I think it's an incredibly deserving win. And it's also a very heartbreaking performance, but it's also a very terrifying performance. Martin Scorsese doesn't shy away from the pretty terrible person that Jake LaMotta was, which I really commend. But you also do get these sides of him where he seems like a very down-to-earth guy. However, that's brushed aside right away when you see these violent outbursts that he has towards his brother, towards his wife, and everyone else around him. And the transformation that De Niro had, not only mentally for this film, but also physically, of course, like, you see De Niro, he really bulked up for this, obviously, but then he also gained a lot of weight for older Jake LaMotta, and I believe that's the only time that De Niro ever put on weight for a role. And I know that some people are like, oh, he's just playing the Oscar card, the gaining weight, losing weight, whatever, and everything. But it's a great performance, and the film is really incredible. It's a really wonderful character study. There's a reason why this is regarded as not only one of the best sports films of all time, but it's also regarded by a lot of people as one of Scorsese's best films, and rightfully so. It's a really impressive feature for him,
yeah.
And it's fantastic. I've watched it quite a few times. I recently rewatched it about a year ago, actually right before we did our Scorsese discussion, and, I appreciate this film more and more every time I watch it. There's something that I just take in after each viewing, and there's something that I missed a prior viewing. But I'm a huge fan of Raging Bull. I think it's fantastic. And it's kind of crazy to me that this is the last time that De Niro won an Oscar. I mean, that was over 40 years ago, and he hasn't won since. He's been nominated a handful of times. But the fact that he hasn't won anything since this is kind of crazy, in my opinion. But Raging Bull is my number 5. Are you going to pass, or is this not on your list?
It's on my list. It's a bit higher up on my list.
I can't wait to hear your thoughts.
I agree with everything you just said. So, but it's a bit higher up on my list for sure.
Can't wait to hear your thoughts on that. So yeah. Now going into our number 4s, what is your pick?
Number 4, I have The Irishman. This is a very personal film for me. I spoke about it last time we were on the pod for that Scorsese episode. For me, again, like, I tend to go for the roles where they are, like, these actors, even for DiCaprio, like, prime example, DiCaprio has never done anything like Wolf of Wall Street in his entire career, so that one is the standout for me, and I'd recommend it to anyone. For me, even though it's, like, so late in his career, I think it's such a different, like, internalized role that De Niro takes on as Frank Sheeran. I think it's so different from what we're normally used to, especially as a mobster. He's more composed, more reserved, not so much level-headed, but it's the fact that he will still get things done on his own terms, on his own time, and under the radar. And I thought that was completely different than what we've seen as, like, the hothead early in his career. I just think that the character of Frank Sheeran reflecting on his life is something that even De Niro took personally as well. And I know Martin Scorsese also took that personally. So I think narratively, what it does for De Niro and Sheeran as a character is just getting older. It's getting older and just not being in your prime as the mobster. And I think that that's what changes the entire film. That's what changes the entire perspective on mobsters, period, I think. So I think that that role is kind of like, I don't want to say definitive, but I think it's very, like, final of him playing, like, the last mobster in the way that he did with that role. I just think it's very different. And I'm very happy that he got some recognition. Of course, he was snubbed for it. He did not get nominated, and it's one of his best performances in his older age. So hopefully Killers of the Flower Moon retcons that and corrects that course. So that's why I love The Irishman so much for De Niro.
So I'm going to pass on this. It's a little higher on my list. I cannot wait to talk about it when I get to it. I'm so very excited to talk about it. Cannot wait to talk about it. Number 4 for me is The Deer Hunter from 1978.
Nice.
Love The Deer Hunter, but it's one of those examples where it's a great film, but it's a film that I could probably only watch once in my life. This is set during the Vietnam War, and it follows 3 soldiers going to war, one of them being De Niro, and the other one's being played by John Savage, and in an Oscar-winning turn from Christopher Walken. This is a very, very, very devastating watch. I brought up with Raging Bull how that's a very tough watch. At least with Raging Bull, there's some levity to it where it's like you don't feel as broken watching that as you do with Deer Hunter, because the Deer Hunter is this psychological character study following these guys going to war and dealing with PTSD and everything post-war and pre-war. And it's one of the best war films ever made. And it's funny because not many people talk about this film compared to other war films that we've gotten, like A Saving Private Ryan, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
But I think The Deer Hunter is exceptional. It was directed by Michael Cimino, and, other than De Niro and Walken, you also had John Cazale in his final role on screen. And talk about one of the best filmographies for that guy. So he was taken from us way too young. He was 42. He lost his life to cancer, but he kept working, and he was in 5 films over 7 years, all of which were nominated for Best Picture at the Oscars, which is incredible. Godfather, Conversation, Godfather 2, Dog Day Afternoon, and The Deer Hunter. And two of those films ended up – actually, three of these films ended up winning Best Picture.
Yeah.
The Deer Hunter, I tend to forget, is a Best Picture winner. I don't know why. Whenever I think of Best Picture winners, I tend to forget that this is one of those Best Picture winners. But De Niro is exceptional in this. I wouldn't say he's the MVP of the movie. Christopher Walken is, like, the MVP of the movie. I think the best performance from that film comes from him. He is so exceptional in that film. I don't think he's ever been better, which is saying a lot, because Christopher Walken happens to be in my favorite film ever made. So it's a little different when you look at it that way. But it's really wonderful. And also Meryl Streep is in this, too. And
oh, just also Meryl Streep. Like, sorry.
Yeah, I can't believe I forgot about Meryl Streep. No, this is actually one of my favorite Meryl Streep performances. I think she's utterly terrific in this. But I really love the psychological character study throughout this film. And I really love how De Niro is kind of, I wouldn't say he's laid back, but he's not as wild in this movie as he was in other movies that came out during that time, like Taxi Driver or Mean Streets, or even The Godfather Part 2. Like, you know, you think about all the other roles that he had done at that point, and, you know, he was on a high because he won the Oscar for The Godfather, and then he had just come off doing Taxi Driver, and now he's doing The Deer Hunter, which is regarded as one of the most influential films ever made. But it's just so, it's a really tough watch, but it's also so incredibly put together. And this film really finds a way of holding up well to this day, 45 years later. It's really impressive how some of the themes brought to life in this film are still prevalent to today. It's kind of crazy when you think about it, but it's a really exceptional film. And this was one that I almost forgot to put on my list for top five De Niro, because it's not a film, crazy enough, that I think of right away when I think of De Niro. I tend to think of Christopher Walken right away when I think of The Deer Hunter, or even Meryl Streep or John Cazale. De Niro, for some reason, I didn't even think of right away. I'm like, oh my God, that's right. He's the lead of the movie. How could I forget about that? But The Deer Hunter is really wonderful. And if anyone out there listening and hasn't seen it, it's really wonderful. And that Russian roulette scene literally still keeps me up at night. That's one of the most terrifying scenes of any movie I've ever seen. It's scarier than most of the horror movies that we have ever gotten. And I'm not even exaggerating when I say that. Like, that's a genuinely jaw-droppingly horrifying scene. And I've seen that scene multiple times in, like, film classes and video essays and everything. And every time I watch it, even though I know what's going to happen, I still just get shaken up by it. I'm still like, oh my God, what's going to happen? Like, is this going to be when the trigger is pulled and this and that and blah, blah, blah? But yeah, The Deer Hunter is exceptional. I knew I had to put it on my list because it really deserves to be talked about and celebrated like other films that will definitely be brought up during this episode. So The Deer Hunter is my number 4. Are you going to pass, or is this not on your list?
So I'm going to say something that's going to upset you.
You haven't seen it, have you?
That is a blind spot for me. But you sold me on it. I'm probably going to watch it this weekend. I've always wanted to watch it. Here's the thing. I've always wanted to watch it. But like you said, it's a tough movie to watch. And then you have to be in the proper headspace, I think, for something like that. So that's probably why. But I will watch it. I'm very sorry.
I'm not offended at all. It's okay. It's okay. Yeah, drop Samantha from the call.
Don't do that.
But yeah, Deer Hunter number 4 for me. So now number 3, what is your pick?
Number 3, I have Raging Bull. I completely echo everything that you said about it. I think it's his best performance. And it's really, really good. The Academy obviously loved it. It does feel Oscar baity. That's why, you know, they loved it. Generic biopic, like, we get that. But the way that Scorsese filmed it is not generic. I fell in love with boxing films because of Raging Bull. I think the work that Scorsese did within the ring, to show those matches with the lighting, the framing, obviously the cinematography was stunning. Everything made me want to learn more about boxing, but that's the technical part of this. Robert De Niro completely transformed. And the thing with Scorsese is that he's going to show you an unlikable character. His main character doesn't have to be likable, you know, and he just wants to tell the story no matter how hard it is to watch it. And I think that De Niro played it perfectly. It's the first time that I really do think that he got lost in this role. In other films, I'm not saying he doesn't get lost in the role, that he doesn't play a character, but I think that like the line was just, it was blurred in that case. But I think he gave a fantastic performance. But yeah, I echo everything that you said. It made me want to learn about boxing, and I have the 4K as well downstairs. I am due for a rewatch. But just everything, the film works perfectly. And it's one of Scorsese's like perfect pictures, in my opinion. So yeah, that's number three.
Yeah, I mean, Scorsese has many perfect pictures. Like that's yeah. And that really is one of them. Straight up, that's one of his best. And really, like I said before, I think when him and Paul Schrader work together, when he directs a script that Paul Schrader writes, for some reason it's like literal magic. And they've done 4 films together, one that may be talked about in a couple of minutes, so be on the lookout for that. But yeah, Raging Bull is really exceptional. It's not the movie that made me fall in love with boxing movies. The other cliched answer, Rocky had that title for me, but Raging Bull was not far behind. I think Raging Bull and Rocky are the two best boxing films ever made.
Yeah,
I mean, I know that that's so cliche, but it really is the truth.
It's the truth, though. Yeah.
When you think of the two greatest boxing films, it's either Rocky or Raging Bull.
Yeah, I think Rocky's the more inspirational one that people can watch like over and over again. Like, that's fine.
Exactly.
But with technical aspects and performance-wise, no offense to Sly Stallone, this is not a slight to him. Obviously, Raging Bull is a more like, I guess, elite.
Oh no!
It's an elite one for boxing,
and yet Rocky, and then Sly will come in and be like, "Yeah, but we won Best Picture. You did not."
It's true. It's true.
It doesn't really matter though. I mean, both are great movies, no matter what.
Yeah.
So my number three is The Irishman. You know, I've talked about this film so much. Not just on this podcast, but just in general. I've talked about this movie way too much within the last 4 years. I literally got a message about a week ago that it was 4 years ago when I went to the world premiere at the New York Film Festival in 2019. And I'm like, oh my God, that was not too long before everything went to crap. And,
you know,
it feels like that movie, like, yeah, 4 years is definitely a long time. But it feels like it came out like 10 years ago. It feels like such a long time ago when we were in the time when The Irishman was out. And this film took forever to even hit the light. It took forever to hit audiences and everything. Like, Scorsese spent years trying to make this, and then no one wanted to give him the money for it. And then Netflix comes in and says, we're going to give you all the money that you need to bring this movie to life. Do what you have to do and work your Scorsese magic. And he did. And it's a masterful outing from Scorsese. It's my second favorite Scorsese film of all time.
It's up there for sure.
And I mean, to echo everything you said specifically regarding De Niro's performance, you know, it's such a different kind of crime gangster film that we had seen from the two of them collaborating. And it's so much more mature and very poignant compared to anything that Scorsese had ever done in the genre. Yeah. Because he was showing the outcome of, you know, getting older and losing your loved ones and the struggle of moving on and acceptance and everything. And I really was taken aback by that when I saw the movie, because I knew that this was going to be very different from everything that he had done in the genre before. But what I didn't anticipate was being as moved by it as I ended up being, because I was anticipating it being a very incredibly entertaining ride and everything. And it certainly was entertaining, but when it pushed that aside to focus on the serious elements and everything, especially in that last third of the movie, I mean, it really goes somewhere that you really did not anticipate when the movie had started 2 hours prior. That last hour and a half is some of the best work that Scorsese has ever done in his career. It's some of the best work that De Niro has ever done in his career. There's a phone call in that last segment of the movie, that specific final third of the movie. And it just stays on him talking, and I'm not going to spoil who, just in case anyone out there somehow has not seen this movie, but it's some of the best acting that De Niro's ever done, and it made me cry as well. I got very emotional watching it because, one, we hadn't seen De Niro give, like, a legitimately incredible performance in so long. And it didn't feel like he was acting. It just felt so authentic.
It's natural.
It felt natural. You watch movies and shows and you could see actors trying to act and you could be like, oh, they're just acting. They're just putting on the performance. Everything with De Niro here, I mean, literally everything with the lead and trio of this movie, but really De Niro in particular, it all just felt so natural. And I really loved following Frank Sheeran. I thought he was such a well-written character and well-versed character. The Irishman, to me, is one of the best films of the past 10 years. And I would say it's my favorite thing that Scorsese has directed in the 21st century. I mean, I know that's up for contention because he's directed so many incredible movies this century. I mean, you look at a film like Wolf of Wall Street, you look at Silence, you look at The Aviator, you look at The Departed, you look at, you know, Killers of the Flower Moon is getting all this acclaim and everything. Then he made Hugo and he made Shutter Island and he made all these different films, all these different kinds of stories. And I just really think that The Irishman is the best thing that he's done in the past, like, 10 to 15 years. I really don't think he's been better than The Irishman in this time frame.
Yeah.
And it is criminal how De Niro didn't get nominated for this, considering the fact that both of his co-stars, rightfully so, got nominated. But it's like, you shouldn't nominate them if you're not going to nominate De Niro as well, because De Niro is the heart of the movie. And, you know, this is his story. Like, he's the titular Irishman. And, you know, the movie would not have worked as well if it wasn't for him as well. Like, the fact that he put so much effort into this. And this was also a highly anticipated film because this was the first time Scorsese and De Niro were working together in 25 years. The last thing they made prior to this was Casino, and they delivered some of the best work ever. And I stand by this. This film was way too good for Netflix. It was way too good for Netflix. It really was. And I'm not saying that it didn't do well and everything, but the fact that it got nominated for so many awards, nothing. Would I have been angry? Am I angry that it lost the Best Picture? I'm not angry because it lost to Parasite. I'm not angry about
that. That's the only reason why I was like perfectly fine with it. I swear to you.
But let's be honest. Adapted screenplay should have gone to this. The only film that I would have honestly given adapted screenplay to that wasn't this was Little Women. That would have been the only other exception. And I like Jojo Rabbit. I like Jojo Rabbit. But like, you're telling me that Jojo Rabbit had a better screenplay than The Irishman? Get the hell out of here. To put Sebastian Maniscalco in the movie, get the fuck out of here. But no, The Irishman, I mean, I can't say any more that you haven't said already. It's really wonderful, and the last thing I'll say is that the last shot of The Irishman is one of the greatest final shots in any film that I have ever seen.
Anyone that says that
final shot is not compelling, I'm sorry, but you're so fucking stupid if you think that. I'm sorry, but that's the truth.
That scene. Literally, that final shot, like, I was already crying the last 20 minutes, like, gross sobbing the last 20 minutes. And then that final shot, I'll never forget. I was by myself at the Tiff Bell Lightbox watching The Irishman, sitting there and just crying, like, to myself. Like, I had to, like, hold back the tears. And you know when you want to, like, just be loud? Like, you can't. But I sat there for like a good 5-10 minutes after just to process what I watched. And I'm like, that moved me so much. Like, it affected me so much that last half hour that to this day, like, I've watched it like 6 or 7 times. It's become like a comfort film for me. But for me, I can't watch that last half hour.
No, it's hard. Like, it's really hard. It's my least favorite. Every time I watch The Irishman, so I'm like, oh God, we're getting to this part. I can't do it. It's like, I know it's coming, but I can't do it. It's like, that always happens with like movies in general. It could even happen with so many of your favorite movies. Like, you sit down, you're like, oh no, here comes this part where I'm going to feel like crap. Yeah. Like, oh my God.
It's true.
It's really insane. It's really insane how, you know, I'm glad that this movie did very well critically. I'm glad that so many people celebrated The Irishman. And I'm glad that it got so many award nominations. But it really is a massive mystery to me of how he didn't get nominated anywhere, considering the fact that, like, literally, you look at that Best Actor lineup, you could have easily taken someone out and given the spot to De Niro. Did Jonathan Price really deserve a nomination for the two popes? And this is just my opinion, of course. He did not. I'm sorry. Would Robert De Niro have beat Joaquin? Probably not. That probably wouldn't have happened. But
he needed a nomination.
He should have been nominated.
That's it. That's it. Like, come on. I also think that the Academy is very different. We had this discussion off screen. I think that's very different. I don't think a film like that would have logically done well, and it didn't. Like, it's sure he got nominated because of who he is. Like, even I'm worried about Killers of the Flower Moon, to be honest. I really am worried about that because, again, like, they're trying to get films in the Academy. This is going to become a totally different podcast if I start this. But it's just different. That's what I'm going to say. It's just different. It's a different time. They're trying to get people to watch it, trying to get people to watch the telecast. So it's an interesting top 10 that we're going to see moving forward. That's all.
No, it is. It absolutely is. And it's definitely a discussion that needs to be had. But it really blows my mind that he didn't even get nominated. But I will say, though, and this may be a hot take, and you're talking to someone who loves Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, it should have gone to either Pacino or Pesci. That should have been either of them. They should have won either one of them for supporting actor.
I would have given it to Pesci.
I would have given it to Pesci as well.
It's a very different role for him. I mean, Pacino, we've seen fly off the handle, but I would have definitely given it to Pesci in that case.
Don't get me wrong, he's great at flying off the handle. That's why we love him. Yeah. But the fact the fact that Pesci was so reserved and quiet and everything, which made him even more very terrifying different. Than we could have ever imagined.
Loved
that's
him.
A powerhouse performance. But yeah, The Irishman is exceptional. I'm glad that we even have a film like The Irishman to exist. And it's really crazy that it just still blows my mind that nobody wanted to give him the money for it. But Netflix had different faith climate. In him. And I may have just said a few minutes ago this movie was too good for Netflix. And I do stand by that. But at least Netflix believed in Scorsese and knew that he was going to deliver, even with the skyrocket of a budget that this movie had.
I know. It's true. And I think that the same goes for Killers of the Flower Moon. It just breaks my heart. It just does because, like, it's him. It's this man, like, it's Martin Scorsese. This is not someone who's gonna make a bad movie. Not every director makes a bad movie, that's not what I'm saying. It's just the fact that, like, you know he's gonna deliver. You know he's gonna deliver. Like, it just doesn't make any sense to me. Like, he's an absolute legend. So, it just upsets me that he has to go through all of this, jump all of these hurdles to get his movie made. It just doesn't make sense to me.
I know. It's literally ridiculous. It just makes no sense at all, but you know, I'm glad that The Irishman exists, and, you know, if we say anything more, we're going to spend this entire podcast talking about The Irishman, even though it's not even in our top two. So, transitioning into our top two, I have a feeling that we have at least one film in common. I definitely think that we're going to have one overlap here, because if you don't have this particular film in your top two, it might be the most shocking thing that has ever happened on this podcast, but we will have to see. So please tell me and the audience what your second favorite De Niro film of all time is.
Well, I mentioned it at the very beginning. The Godfather Part II for me, even though he was supporting, he stole the spotlight from Pacino. I usually watch the chronological order of The Godfather. So the entire De Niro as Vito Corleone is placed before Brando's Vito Corleone, and then it goes straight into Michael Corleone's story, and that's like my favorite way to watch The Godfather. If you haven't done it, please watch it like that. It's so good. He's fantastic in it, and like I said, it's very young De Niro, and he has, you know, the early qualities of what Vito Corleone eventually turns into. Like, he's just so freaking good. He's so in tuned with it. One of his best performances, because for me, he's like, it's just all based on subtleties. And Vito Corleone for me early on was very subtle with, you know, talking to people, very soft spoken talking to people. And he still got that stuff down, but he's still menacing at the exact same time. I remember the one scene where the landlord goes to talk to him, and it still sticks out in my mind that it's, they're talking about the rent and he's just there stirring his espresso and like looking at this guy like, you're gonna do what I'm telling you to do. But he's not like vulgar, he's not angry, he's just like really gonna talk to him sternly. But you can't take your eyes off of De Niro as Vito. And like, I remember watching it just as part two, not in chronological order. I would wait for the scenes for like a young Vito Corleone. Like I would wait for De Niro's scenes in part two. No offense to Pacino as Michael Corleone, don't get me wrong, but De Niro is just so captivating in that role and he did a fantastic job. So that's like second for me for that reason.
So it is also my number two.
Yay!
You know, The Godfather Part Two. I mean, this is another film where it's like, what do you say about this film that hasn't been said already? One of the greatest sequels ever made. A case where the sequel could top the original. I know that that's up for debate.
No. It's fact. It is fact that Part Two is better than Part One. I'm sorry. It's fact.
Which is saying a lot because Part One, in my opinion, is a masterpiece. It's a perfect film. No, it's 10 out of 10. Yeah. But so is the sequel. 10 out of 10, flawless, no notes.
It's the only sequel to win like back-to-back like Best Picture. So
it, and the fact that there's only been two sequels that have done that, and they're both like genuinely incredible sequels. I mean, you look at the list of the greatest sequels ever put to screen, and I would guarantee that 90% of the lists that people read, they both have The Godfather Part Two and Return of the King. Like, I would think that those are, you know, in contention for being the best sequel. And they really are. I mean, those are two of the best sequels ever made. But The Godfather Part Two, I mean, it further showcases what we love about The Godfather and takes it up to a 10. And I bet you so many people were so worried about The Godfather Part Two walking in because The Godfather was so loved and respected. It's like, how do you continue this? How do you find a way of topping this? And the fact that they made the movie essentially two movies and combined it into one long epic is really incredible. The fact that half of the movie we see what happens post The Godfather with Michael Corleone taking the reins and everything, but then we also get to see the origin of Vito Corleone. Mm-hmm. And it's incredible. It flows so beautifully. And this could have easily been bad. And it's so funny because when the movie actually did come out 50 years ago, people weren't super high on it as they are now. It came out to pretty mixed reviews. And that's the case with a lot of movies that come out when they first come out. Like The Shining wasn't exactly the most acclaimed, celebrated movie when it came out. The Empire Strikes Back is one of the best examples of that because people liked the movie, but they weren't gushing about it back in 1980 like they are now in 2023, where they regard it as one of the best sequels, but also possibly one of the best films ever made. Mm-hmm. And The Godfather Part II is so captivating to watch. It's a very long film, but it flies by. There's not an ounce of fat to be found. I love that it takes its time with what it's trying to say. Similar to The Irishman, I like how The Irishman doesn't go super quick. It takes its time trying to convey what it's trying to say, and very beautifully. And I know that super long movies can throw off some people. I get it. I totally understand that. But if the movie earns that runtime, then it works really beautifully. And The Godfather and The Godfather 2 are perfect cases of that. But really, to talk about De Niro, he's so perfect as young Vito Corleone. And I really love how he tries to separate himself from what Marlon Brando obviously brought to the portrayal of older Vito Corleone. And it's so interesting, too, knowing the story of how De Niro actually auditioned for The Godfather Part 1, but he didn't get in it, and then he got cast in The Godfather Part 2 to play the younger version of the main character of that first film, and then he ended up winning an Academy Award for it, and he was only, I think he was like 30 years old when he won.
Yeah.
And he actually didn't even show up to the ceremony because he thought he wasn't going to win. And then he ended up winning, and you know, I kind of feel bad for him low-key. It's like, oh, you missed the opportunity to be there when you won your very first Oscar. Like, that's crazy. And it's just so crazy. That was so early in his career, too. He was still becoming, like, a name. Like, he had already done Mean Streets, which wasn't the most seen movie out there. But it definitely got some word of mouth. And then The Godfather Part II came out and completely changed his career from there.
Yeah.
And it really is incredible. It's been a long time since I've seen The Godfather Part 2 in its entirety. I rewatched the first Godfather last year when they re-released it in theaters for its 50th anniversary. So I'm hoping that next year for this movie's 50th anniversary that it gets re-released in theaters. I would love to watch all three back-to-back in theaters. And that almost happened a few months ago. That actually almost happened. I almost did that. But I don't know if I could have put myself through it because it was on a Sunday and Brian works on Monday, so it just wouldn't have worked out. Going from being at the theater from 12 p.m. to almost 12 a.m., and then waking up at 6 a.m. to go to work, that would not have been okay. But, yeah, The Godfather Part 2 is exceptional. It's one of the greatest films ever made. It's one of the greatest sequels ever made. It's in contention to maybe be the best sequel ever made. It's not my favorite sequel of all time, but it's up there. It's definitely up there for sure. It just doesn't get any better than that. There's so many memorable scenes, but De Niro especially is absolutely captivating in this film. They couldn't have cast young Vito Corleone any better. And I really wish that there are reports going around that Megalopolis will probably be the last movie that Francis Ford Coppola ever directs. It kind of bums me out that De Niro is not in it unless we're told something different. But The Godfather Part 2 is exceptional. I knew that that would be on your list because, I mean, you put the character as your character, so... But then again, I put Meet the Parents as my character, and that's not even on my list.
He didn't make the list. How dare you do that? You're out of the circle.
Squint his eyes and everything.
You're out of the circle of trust. This is the circle of trust. And you're up here.
I'm watching you, Fokker. I'm watching you. But yeah, Godfather Part 2 is number 2 for both of us. Yeah, and it leaves me wondering what the heck your number 1 is, because I genuinely do wonder if we have this film in common as well.
What do you think it is?
I don't want to take a guess. No guest has ever asked me to take a guess.
I want you to take a guess because this is a very unexpected one. No one knows this about me for this particular film. No one knows.
Bronx Tale?
Nope.
Let me take one more guess. A Scorsese film, right?
It is a Scorsese picture. This is a very underappreciated film. Very underappreciated.
Okay. If it's what I think it is, definitely biggest shock of the podcast so far. Cape Fear?
Hells? Yeah. It is Cape Fear. I know it's a remake, but De Niro as Max Cady, I had a very difficult time watching that movie. That's all I'm going to say. It was a very difficult time watching that thing, and I had to keep pausing it. I've never seen him like this. This is a very underrated performance for him, no matter how difficult it is to watch. It's absolutely brilliant from De Niro. It's just borderline insane what he does in this film. I know that people don't like talking about this one. I know that people are touchy with Cape Fear, but it just completely blew me away. I'm a huge fan of psychological thrillers. Massive fan of thrillers. I watch them at midnight when it's nice and quiet out. It's completely dark and I will watch a psychological thriller. I watched Cape Fear the very first time at midnight. Poor choice because it scared the living daylights out of me. And he was just brilliant in this. So it's controversial for sure. But I think that Cape Fear is his best for me personally. And it's a very underrated performance. What is it? Is it bad? Am I being judged?
No. I would just love some further insight into why you decide to pick this film as your number one. Like, are you a big fan of the film, or do you just love the performance? Like, I would love to know some more insight of what makes Cape Fear your number one.
it's the performance. Like, it's literally the performance. Like I said, it's a very different role for him to take. It's very dark. He went to very dark places for this. It's a very challenging role for him to take and for him to stay in that mindset. And I think that's what impressed me the most out of everything. Again, these, other than analyze this, my top four are interchangeable. I can really honestly say that. But for me, like, Cape Fear, him as Max Cady just stuck in my head. And I don't want to say it traumatized me, but, like, it's just, like, it's a lot. So, yeah, just very different for De Niro in that case.
The way I have my arms around my head right now is similar to when he's in the theater smoking and just cackling from the top of his lungs. It's and everything.
Crazy.
It's an exceptional performance. It's an absolutely incredible performance. And I agree, it's a very underrated performance from him. And it's actually an underrated entry of Scorsese's catalog. It's not one of my favorites from Scorsese. I did watch this for the first time during the height of COVID, so not too long after The Irishman came out. And I remember just hearing so much about this film. My dad fucking loves this movie. He adores this movie so much, my father. And he was just saying, like, oh, you need to watch Cape Fear, Scorsese, De Niro and everything, Nick Nolte, Jessica Lange. And I'm like, well, I like all those people. So sure, I'll watch it. Did not know it was a remake. Still have not seen the original, but I hear the original is fire. I hear it's great. And I do, and I love Gregory Peck. And who else was in it? Who else was in it? Gregory Peck and
where's 1962? Hang on. Where are we?
Robert Mitchum.
That's pretty much.
Yeah, Robert Mitchum and Gregory Peck. Who, by the way, I think it's really fucking cool that they both had small roles in this remake. I think that's awesome, personally. I think that's a really cool thing. And, you know, this movie, and I don't know if you agree with this, it is very terrifying to watch, but it's also just, for Scorsese standards, and this is just my opinion, of course, it does come off, and again, this is just my opinion, it is a little cheesy, but it embraces that. It is a little ridiculous. But yes. And it embraces that, and it's nice that Scorsese was doing something kind of different from what we usually see from him, and that opening where he leaves the prison, and it just that, oh my God, that shot of him, like, doing the crunches or whatever, and then he just walks out of the prison, and then it's just, like, the camera, like, goes into his chest and everything. Oh my God. Or his face. I don't remember exactly how they do it. Yeah, I've only seen the movie once, but, man, it's so good. And that whole sequence where he's like, counselor, come out wherever you are. Oh, man, brutally terrifying. Could you be there? Are you there right now? Oh my God.
He was. I had to keep pausing it. I'm not lying to you. Like, I had to literally pause and just take a breather because I'm like, I've never seen him like this at all. So.
And then could we briefly talk about the sequence that he has with Juliette Lewis? Because fuck, one of the most haunting things that I've ever seen him do.
I was sitting there like, what is happening? Like, literally, I was in shock watching that scene.
Oh, so was I. So was I. The places that it goes, and then
it's so unsettling.
And then Nick Nolte just screamed from the top of his lungs, "Max Cady gone crazy!" Like in that crazy Nick Nolte voice that I love so much. But no, it's a good movie. I do like it. I just don't love it as much as other De Niro Scorsese collaborations. I wouldn't say it's my least favorite from the two of them. But it's definitely not top tier Scorsese De Niro for me. But if you're just going off the performance, it is a really phenomenal performance. An Oscar nominated performance, in fact, as well, which is very, very cool. But my number one is indeed a Scorsese film. And I am very curious to hear your thoughts on this. Now, this was a very tough decision picking my number one because obviously, there's so many great collaborations with De Niro and Scorsese. There's so many great films that they've made together.
Yeah.
And obviously, I've talked about two of them, and you talked about other ones as well. But my absolute favorite that they have done together, and really, I think that this might be my favorite thing that De Niro has ever done. My favorite one, my number one, is Taxi Driver. I Love Taxi Driver to pieces. I think it's one of the best films ever made. And there are so many things on top of De Niro's performance that I truly adore about this film. First of all, I live in New Jersey. I grew up right outside New York, and I go to New York all the time. I love New York cinema. It's one of my favorite genres of all time. And obviously, Scorsese is no stranger to New York cinema. So many of his films were set in New York and shot in New York. But this is, like, next-level New York filmmaking. Yeah. So, Travis Bickle, hell of a character. Truly riveting character study. Such a troubled individual. But yet, you're kind of rooting for him, but you're also kind of against him, too. You're not necessarily condoning the stuff that he's doing. But you just love following this character because of how good De Niro is as this character. This was right after he won the Oscar for The Godfather Part 2. So obviously everyone was really excited to see what he was going to do next. And then he decided to work with Marty again. And Taxi Driver is filled with so many of the most memorable scenes and lines in film history. I mean, of course, You're Talking to Me, one of the most iconic scenes in cinema history. So good. The shot where he's sitting in the movie theater and he has his hand over his mouth and then does the gun thing right beside his face. And then, obviously, the shot where he has the fake gun to his head and everything. Just chef's kiss right there. But De Niro is unbelievably good here. In contention to maybe be the best acting he's ever done in my eyes. But there's so many other incredible elements of this movie. I think it's beautifully directed. I think it's beautifully written. The writing here is really exceptional because not only do you get a lot with Travis Bickle, you also get a lot with these other characters. And again, like I said before, when Martin Scorsese and Paul Schrader collaborate together, it is literal magic in my eyes. I really think that when Scorsese brings to life Schrader's scripts, it's some of the best work that he's ever done. I mean, you look at Taxi Driver, then you look at Raging Bull, and then you look at what else did they do together? The Last Temptation of Christ, that's another exceptional Scorsese out, and then you look at a film that is so criminally underrated in Bringing Out the Dead, which I don't know why nobody talks about that movie, because that film is genuinely fantastic and it's a film that really should get more recognition than it gets. But Taxi Driver is a really wonderful character study. The performances are incredible. The score is one of the best scores I've ever heard in my life. I can list so many things about this movie that I love so much, from the acting to the score to the imagery to the pacing to the editing. Everything about this movie is masterclass. It really is one of Scorsese's very best films. It's one of the best films of De Niro's filmography. It might be my favorite De Niro film. Actually, I don't know why I say might, because it really is my favorite De Niro film for so many reasons. And it's been a classic for almost 50 years, and it's going to go down as a classic till the end of time. Taxi Driver is my favorite Robert De Niro film of all time. I really don't know what else I could say about it that hasn't been said already. It's a truly visionary film, never gets old, and I hope that down the road, I get to show this to my child when they get into film. And they will love it just as much as me. So obviously with Taxi Driver not cracking your list, I'm so curious to hear your thoughts on this film.
It's definitely like sixth out of my top 10. Like it's in my honorable mentions. For me, I love De Niro as Travis Bickle. I think it's an incredible role for him. The movie as a whole for me just doesn't, I don't know, I watched it, I think last year I watched it again because I had to do another pod, and I watched it and I'm like, for me, there was just some element missing for it to be like a perfect film or like one of my favorite Scorsese pictures. So it's really, I'm so sorry for saying it, but for me, it was just something felt off. But there's no denying that De Niro was absolutely incredible as Travis Bickle. Like, it's one of the most iconic roles ever. Like you said, there are specific scenes that are incredible, as you mentioned. But yeah, I think it's the most, like, New York film out of his filmography. And yeah, I think I just think that De Niro is really good. Just not my personal favorite, so I'm sorry.
That's okay. And I don't know if I brought this up when I was babbling on and on for 20 minutes about this movie, but I'll just say it again. Cybill Shepherd, in case I didn't bring this up. Cybill Shepherd, especially in the 70s, was like top tier crush for me. This and The Last Picture Show are like the films where I watch and I'm like, oh my God, literally Cybill Shepherd is so elegant and so perfect and just literally so sweet and so beautiful. And it's just like, wow. Like, if I were a guy in the 70s watching these movies, I would probably say that she would be the top crush. The way that I gush about people like Jessica Chastain or Oscar Isaac, I feel like if I were in the 70s, Cybill Shepherd would basically be my Jessica Chastain of that time.
See, that's me with De Niro.
Yeah.
I have tried not to say that the entire time, but like that's me with De Niro.
Listen, young De Niro is a very good-looking guy. Like, he really is.
De Niro at any age is just, he's great. That's all I'm going to say.
No, he is great. He is great. And, you know, there's obviously so many films that we didn't talk about today that we're going to definitely brush on in our honorable mentions. So before we get into our honorable mentions, let's recap our list from 5 to 1. So, Amanda, what is your list?
Yeah, so I have Analyzed This. I have, I think I put... What did I do? I think I put Raging Bull there. And then I did The Irishman, Godfather Part 2, and then Cape Fear, which is controversial, according to Brian. But yeah.
Wait, you put The Irishman at number 4, not number 3.
Right? I put Irishman 4th, right? I did.
Yeah.
Irishman 4th, Raging Bull 3, because I remember we... Yeah, it was one of those. So, to say it again, because I messed up, because I put arrows beside it because I switched it last second. I put Analyze This at 5, put The Irishman at 4, I put Raging Bull at 3, and I put The Godfather Part 2 at 2, and then Cape Fear at 1.
And to recap my list, coming in number 5 is Raging Bull, number 4 is The Deer Hunter, number 3 The Irishman, number 2 The Godfather Part 2, and number 1 is Taxi Driver. So that is who of our list on our favorite Robert De Niro films. So let's talk about some of the films that didn't make the cut. So what are some films that you want to give a shout out to, Amanda?
I'm going to save one of them for last, and just to make you laugh. I watched Heat for the very first time last year, and it blew my mind. You have two giants with Pacino and De Niro, and I thought they were excellent, and De Niro looks very good in Heat. So I enjoyed watching that movie. I love him in Jackie Brown. I think it's an underappreciated performance. I loved him. He was hilarious in that. For me personally, it was so funny. So it was really good to see him in a Tarantino picture. And also, Jackie Brown is the best Tarantino film, but that's for another podcast. Mm-hmm. See, I already got the face. I got the face. That's all I did it for, fam. I'm just saying, that's all I did it for, because that's
gonna
a whole other podcast.
I'm going to do the De Niro face.
Yeah. It's a whole other podcast, but I just got to say it. I have Mean Streets, I have Goodfellas, I have Taxi Driver, obviously Meet the Parents, and I unapologetically love Dirty Grandpa. I laughed so hard. De Niro and Zac Efron had amazing chemistry, in my opinion. I thought they were a lot of fun. And then De Niro and Aubrey Plaza was just disastrous, but it was so funny to watch. And I liked Dirty Grandpa. It was a good movie. It was a good time. That's all I'm saying.
For me, in terms of honorable mentions, I mean, Goodfellas is like the big honorable mention for me, because for a long time, Goodfellas was my all-time favorite film. And I think it would have felt weird for me personally to put that in the top 5, because he's not, you know, like, he's a lead in that movie. But honestly, the first thing that I think of when I think of Goodfellas is Ray Liotta and Joe Pesci. Of the three of them, De Niro is the one I think of the least. But of course, he's incredible. And Goodfellas is still one of my all-time favorite films. It literally is a game changer for my love for film, and I owe so much to that film. I mean, I have a poster of it directly behind me, but that's a very high honorable mention for me. And then, of course, other honorable mentions. I mean, there's so many. There's so many to name. It's just crazy. I love Silver Linings Playbook personally. I know that me and Amanda were talking a little bit about this off air. It's a very personal film for me, and it kind of came out at a time where I think I needed a film like that.
Yeah.
And I loved him in it. I thought he was fantastic. When that came out, I thought that was the best acting that he had done in a very long time, because at that period, he was doing a lot of not so great movies, and he was so good. Like, I loved the father-son relationship between him and Bradley Cooper. I thought that was really wonderful. And just seeing Robert De Niro play, like, this very OCD-heavy Eagles fan was... it was a choice for De Niro. It was definitely out of left field, and I really liked that a lot. Heat, yeah, of course. I mean, Heat is great. Casino, that's a great film, too. I mean,
that's what I forgot.
A very underrated De Niro film is This Boy's Life with him and Leonardo DiCaprio from the early 90s, which came out 30 years ago, which is absolutely nuts. And now 30 years later, they're finally doing another movie together. Under the director that both of them have worked with the most, which is incredible to me. Yeah. It's so good. This Boy's Life is exceptional. And you want to talk about interesting accent choices? Me and Amanda, before, we're talking about how De Niro was almost in The Departed, and Amanda brought, oh, I can't really see him with a Boston accent per se. In This Boy's Life, De Niro has an incredibly thick, and I mean very thick, Irish accent. And it's very thick, but it's great, though. It's a very underrated movie. Yeah. Love it to pieces. It's very, very good. In terms of honorable, I mean, Analyze This, we brought up. The Untouchables, I think, is great. I think he's so good as Al Capone. Brian De Palma, great film. The Cana Comedy, a film that I watched for the first time a year ago.
So good.
And I loved it so much. It's one of the rare times in recent memory where I watched them and then slapped the 5-star on it on the first viewing. I really genuinely thought it was incredible. And yes, when I had watched it, I'm like, okay, yeah, I see a lot of I could tell that Todd Phillips was very inspired by this movie when he made Joker and everything, but that's a different discussion for another time. Fittingly enough, another De Niro movie, crazy enough, that's also a De Niro movie. I'll talk about it for 5 seconds. I actually like Joker. I don't care what anyone says.
I love Joker. Like, but that's besides the point.
I like Joker a lot, and I really liked De Niro in it for his time on screen. And that really talk show sequence is one of the best scenes of the entire film.
You know what you get, right?
You get what you fucking deserve. What else is... Awakenings is very good, I think. That's a good one. Him and Robin Williams under the direction of Penny Marshall.
Yeah, I agree. Once Upon a Time in America also is very good in that.
That's a major blind spot of mine. That's one that I need to watch. I really want to check that out, but I don't know if I could devote 4 hours to a single movie. I have to find the time to do that. And everything,
you sat through Killers of the Flower Moon. It's almost there. You're fine.
Yeah, you just spoiled to the you just spoiled to the audience that I already saw the movie. It's okay. Oh, man.
Didn't you say it at the beginning?
Did I? I don't remember. Anyways, in terms of honorable mentions, and this... Oh, God. See, I love... Amanda, you know I love you. This is great. This is hilarious.
You didn't watch it. I lied.
Yeah, I didn't watch it. Jackie Brown, honorable mention. Copland, honorable mention. Marvin's Room, honorable mention. Marvin's Room is very underrated as well. That's a very underrated film. Also starring Leonardo DiCaprio. De Niro's role is very small in that, but that's like a great film and a really wonderful showcase. Meryl Streep and Diane Keaton deliver some of their best work to date in that film. And I know I'm forgetting something else. Meet the Parents, of course. Mm-hmm. Machete. I love Machete. Machete. And I loved him in it. I thought he was great in it. And then
I'd also say Midnight Run, if you want another comedy. I thought he was really good in that too.
That's another major blind spot for me. I have not seen Midnight Run. But the last honorable mention that I will give is, as I said to you off air, rom-coms are so hit or miss for me. And even though this wasn't particularly a rom-com, this woman has created some of the best rom-coms ever. When he collaborated with Nancy Meyers on a film, I was like, oh, he's just doing this for the paycheck. He's obviously not doing this because he wants to do it. No, The Intern is a very good film, and he's very good in it. And I love, love his chemistry with Anne Hathaway. I thought they worked off each other beautifully in that film. Really, really wonderful stuff. So, yeah, that's it with the honorable mentions for me. And, you know, to go into some of the films that he has coming out, obviously, we'll start with the smaller ones and then make our way to the big ones. First, he has a film called Ezra coming out, directed by Tony Goldwyn. Now, this actually just made its premiere a few weeks ago at the Toronto Film Festival, which both me and Amanda attended, but neither of us have seen the movie. I don't know too much about this film. I have a bit of a bias because two of my best friends in the whole world worked on the movie, so I definitely want to check it out when I get the chance and everything. And then there's a film that he also has coming out called Wise Guys, which is directed by Barry Levinson. And Robert De Niro is actually playing two roles in this movie. He's playing two mobsters. And I don't know how this is going to pan out. I think it's kind of cool that he's playing two roles, especially at this age in his career. So we'll see how, if this is like a genuinely great movie or if it's a not great movie. And then he has a film coming out called Tin Soldier. Don't know too much about this movie, but it co-stars Jamie Foxx. And that's a cool pairing, Jamie Foxx and Robert De Niro. I'm totally behind that. I'm definitely behind that for sure. And before we get into talking about the big film that we're doing this episode in honor of, what is your anticipation for these three films that I just talked about?
The one where he's playing two roles, Wise Guys, when I heard that he was going to take that on at the age that he is, that got me so freaking excited. That is probably my most anticipated out of all of them. Like, yes, I'm excited for Killers of the Flower Moon, but for me, I think that's going to be his most, like, oh, that's just going to be one of his most interesting, like, dual roles that he could possibly take. Like, I'm so excited for that. I'm excited for Ezra, too. I think it's going to be a cute little film. But that one, for sure, Wise Guys, is right up there for me.
And now, speaking of Killers of the Flower Moon, it's time we talk about our anticipation for it. So, as Amanda accidentally spoiled, and all out of good love, of course, I have seen Killers of the Flower Moon. I just saw it a few days ago at the time of this recording. And by the time this episode is up, I believe Amanda will have also seen it as well. So if you guys want to know her thoughts, obviously give her a follow on her socials to see her thoughts on it. So I would love to hear your anticipation for it first before I go into brief detail of what I thought about the movie and everything. I'm not going to go too much into it, of course, but I would just love to know your anticipation for the movie as a whole, but also what are you excited to see regarding De Niro in the movie? So tell us why you're excited for Killers of the Flower Moon.
First and foremost, it's a Scorsese picture. Second, I read the book by David Gran, and the book absolutely floored me. If you have not read this book, he gathers actual files, like court filings, everything that is factual in this book, but he also constructs a narrative at the exact same time. Like, he transports the reader back to when all of this was taking place while dropping these court filings. And I think that the structure of this book is absolutely fantastic. I don't know if Scorsese is going to take what was from the book. I know that, you know, he adapted, he changed a bit from what I've been hearing. But if the structure is quite similar, then we're in for a real treat here. I'm really happy I read the book before I watched the movie. As I was reading, I saw De Niro's character, I saw Leo's character, and I saw, of course, the lovely Lily Gladstone in it as well, and I visualize them. I feel like no one can do this story the way, like, as brutal as it's supposed to be shown. I think he's able to show it for what it is, and a lot of people can gloss over certain factors. They don't want to dramatize certain things, they don't want to put certain images on screen, and I think that Scorsese is the right director and is ballsy enough to show what had happened, the traumatic events that had happened, for audiences to understand the pain that they had gone through during this period. So I think that he's able to do that, and that's what makes me excited for Scorsese and Killers of the Flower Moon. They're also saying that this is one of De Niro's best performances to date, and we just listed like a whole, like, how many like movies did we just list? So for them to say it this late in his career, I think it's just so exciting to see him take on such a meaty role again, working with Scorsese. And the character that I read in the book, if De Niro obviously performs it well, he's gonna absolutely blow me away. So there are a lot of things in play here as to why I'm so excited for Killers of the Flower Moon.
Yeah, I have seen the film, and it was obviously one that I was incredibly excited for, pretty much for the reasons that you listed. I mean, a new Scorsese film is, when you go into a new Scorsese film, it's kind of like walking into the Super Bowl. That's what it's this big event. It's literally something, it's like a drop everything and just go to it. That's literally how it is. There are certain filmmakers that when they announce their newest project, it's like a drop everything and go. One of those filmmakers is Paul Thomas Anderson. Another one of those filmmakers is Hayao Miyazaki. And Scorsese is especially one of those filmmakers for me. And I have not read the book, so I'm not going to be this guy that's like, oh, this is how it is in the book and that's how it is in the film. But I could just say very briefly that I really, really, really loved the film. And it's incredible. It's not, in terms of like the recent strain of Scorsese films, I would say from Shutter Island to this. And this is not a diss towards the film, because I think all of these films that he's done, Shutter Island, Hugo, Wolf, Silence, Irishman, and this, I think they're all incredible films. This might be my least favorite that I've seen. Now, granted, I've only seen it once. It's still very fresh in my head. I think if I go see it a second time, which I absolutely will, I feel like my opinion could change. I feel like it's going to change for the better. I don't see that my feelings weakening for this movie, but it's really incredible the storytelling that Scorsese was able to present with this. It's some of his darkest, most, but yet it's also his, some of his most poignant storytelling that he's done. He doesn't shy away from the harshness of what went down in this story, but he also finds a way of adding so much delicacy to it, which I really commend. And Lily Gladstone is a fucking star. I'm so excited to see her career catapult into further stardom after this movie. DiCaprio, while he is very, very good in the movie, I don't really get why some people are like, this is the best performance of DiCaprio's career. And I'm like, have you not watched Wolf of Wall Street? Like, have you not watched Once Upon a Time in Hollywood? Have you not watched the best film of all time, Catch Me If You Can? I mean, come on. Like, come on, boys. Come on, boys and girls. Like, come on, seriously. But De Niro, you just brought up how a lot of people have been saying it's one of the best performances of his career. And it absolutely is one of the best performances of his career. I was telling you off air that somehow he found the way of topping his already masterful work in The Irishman. And it's one of his meatiest performances to date. He is so terrifying, but he's also somehow very likable in this. He brings that De Niro charm that we love to see, but he's also utterly terrifying in this. It's a really remarkable performance, and it's one that I really hope with every fiber of my being gets all the love this season. I don't see it being an Oscar-winning performance, and I'm not some guy that likes to predict the Oscars so early on, but he's definitely getting nominated. I don't see them doing the same mistake again by snubbing him for a Scorsese performance, and a very good Scorsese performance. But yeah, I loved Killers of the Flower Moon. I'm so excited for everyone to see it. I'm so excited for you to see it. I cannot wait to see how this does. It got so much acclaim out of Cannes, and now we're slowly getting closer to everybody seeing this film finally. And it feels like it's been a long time coming, and it has been a long time coming. I mean, this project was talked about even before The Irishman came out. I know. And now we're finally here, and the movie is now making its way around the world, and people are going to go see it. And I'm so excited, because this is a story that needs to be told, and it needs to be told now. And it finds a way of somehow still being timely with things going on. This story is set over 100 years ago, and the fact that it still incorporates things that are timely now is saying a lot. So I'm excited for everyone to see it. I cannot wait. I think it's going to do so well. I don't know how it's going to do financially, but I feel like people are going to be talking about this to where hopefully it does have a successful run in the cinema. And definitely see this on the big screen. See this in the theater. Go support the artists behind this film, not just Scorsese, but all the individual voices whose voices need to be heard. Yeah, I loved Killers of the Flower Moon. I'm so excited for everyone to see it. And yeah, you know, to close out our thoughts on De Niro, one of the GOATs. He really is one of the greatest actors of all time. And, you know, when the day comes where, you know, he decides, oh, I'm never going to act again, or I'm going to stop acting, we're all just going to sit back and realize that he's had a great array of work throughout 50 years of giving us incredible performances one after the other, working with so many incredible filmmakers, bringing a lot of stories to life. And I love De Niro. I really do. So, I mean, Amanda, what are your final thoughts on Robert De Niro?
I mean, he's the GOAT. He's the GOAT. Everyone you talk to, and it's true, you're either a De Niro fan or you're either a hardcore Pacino fan. And majority of the time, I remember there was a poll on Twitter and people were voting for either Pacino or De Niro, and it ended up being tied. So it's a poor example. But there are many people who love De Niro and they always tend to go with him just because of how iconic his films are. He's so freaking talented. And I just think that, like you said, there's a charm that it's only De Niro's charm. And to this very day, he's still so incredibly charming. And he's also a straight shooter. And he'll tell it like it is. The older he gets, he's been very honest about everything. And I really love his, I guess, I want to say his relationship, his brotherhood with Scorsese. I think that they bring out the best in each other. And I just love them together. But De Niro has done everything under the sun. He's a chameleon. He has made people cry. He's made people become like very terrified of him, i.e. Max Cady. And he's brought laughter into people's homes, into people's lives. And I think that a lot of people will, you know, down the road, will either be introduced to him for the very first time through any one of the films that we listed or any comedies that we've listed, and want to go back and watch more because he just has such like an inviting presence, and he's just such a like a strong actor that you can't help but watch everything that he's in and just be completely drawn to him. He has a perfect screen presence, and he's my favorite. He's been my favorite since I was a kid. You know, and I love him. And that's it. He's just, De Niro's the best. He's the absolute best. So,
Amanda, thank you for coming on. Such a blast having you on and getting to talk with you today about Robert De Niro and the genius of his craft and everything. Really, thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, I had a blast. I mean, I could talk about him all day. You could talk about him all day. We can talk about movies all day, which is amazing. So just, it's always a good time with you, Brian. So thank you so much for having me for this special episode.
I really appreciate that. Seriously, thank you for that. That's so kind of you to say. Yeah, tell the listeners where they can find you online. Where could they find your work?
Yeah, well, you guys can always follow me over at AMX NDA Reviews on Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, and Threads, because Threads is still a thing. Don't forget that. You can check out my website, CandidXCinema.com, and my YouTube, Candid Cinema.
And you guys can follow me on all social medias at Brian Suffield. You guys can subscribe to this podcast on any podcast and platform. We have a Twitter and Instagram, so you guys can stay up to date with what's going on in Film Fragments. Let us know your favorite film starring Robert De Niro, and let us know your anticipation for Killers of the Flower Moon. I'm sure everyone is over the moon excited for it. Absolutely. So be on the lookout for more great episodes coming your way with cool guests, cool topics. Lots of great stuff coming your way for the remainder of 2023. Guys, thank you so much for listening to this episode. I really, really appreciate it. And I will see you guys for the very next episode of Film Fragments. Take care, everybody.